Well, Dr. Stan, back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being because, well, we have with us on the line Mark Blacksell. We're going to be talking about his organization, SaveMinds.org. We're going to be talking about the terrible tragedy of the children whose minds are being destroyed in America by the use of vaccines, and the fact that there are people within our government who know exactly what they're doing. They know the toxic effect of mercury and the other things in the vaccines. And for some reason, they're concealing that information from the doctors and from the people who could really make a difference. Mark, how did you get involved in this battle?
Well, I got involved because I've got a child that was diagnosed with autism when she was not quite three. And that was about 7 years ago.
How old is she now? She's about 10 now?
Just turned 10 last month.
All right, now, of course, what happened when you went to the doctors? And of course, it's obvious he's not normal. What sort of reaction was she having? Was she beginning to withdraw?
Yeah, she started out life as a normal, typically developing infant. You know, everything seemed fine, and as a baby, you know, through really her first birthday, everything was moving along. She was interacting. She was starting to speak. She passed all her milestones. And then sometime, and there was no specific date, you know, it was sometime between her first and second birthday, she began to just sort of slip away into her own world and lost speech, began to sort of keep to herself. It was not completely noticeable at the time, although I would have to say as a father I was a little less clued in than my wife, who was beginning to figure out that something was wrong well before I did.
Mark, are you on a regular hardline telephone?
No, I'm on my mobile phone.
Do you have a regular? Do you have access to a hardline phone? Because you don't get quite good best tone. You don't have a hardline phone?
I do. It's a little trickier in our house for me to use it because.
All right, fine. Well, maybe during one of the sometime, if there's any way you could possibly get to the hardline phone, would really get better tone. But be that as it may, what happened? There was you took your daughter to the doctors. Did they recognize what was going on, and what did they tell you?
Well, we went through a fairly long period of workups and diagnoses. We were worried about her hearing. We thought maybe she just wasn't hearing us, so maybe she was deaf, and so she went in for a hearing test. And then we had to get in line for an evaluation, which is kind of interesting looking back on it. There were, you know, so many kids who were being affected and in the process of being assessed that it took several months for us to actually get an evaluation and then several months for them to deliver a diagnosis.
And, of course, what happened when they came up with the diagnosis? What did the medical profession suggest as far as treatment was concerned?
Well, they didn't have very good suggestions about much. They as we sat down to get the diagnosis, they had a few suggestions about the genetic test that we could take for a very rare syndrome. But,
yeah. All right, hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay. Our guest this afternoon is Mark Blaxill, and he has a 10-year-old daughter who was autistic, born normally, and was progressing normally somewhere between the first and second year of age. She began to regress, and eventually they came up with a diagnosis of autism, went to the doctors, they confirmed the diagnosis, said something about genetic testing, and but did they have anything specifically to offer in the way of treatment or means of trying to get her better?
No, actually, not at all.
All right, so what did you do? In face with this, and after all, the doctors, certainly if there was something there that could be done, they would tell you about it. Did they? Anybody suggest it might have been the toxic doses of mercury we were giving to our children at that time?
No, I don't think there were any suggestions. In fact, if you talk to any doctor who's delivering in a mainstream hospital who's delivering an autism diagnosis today, they'll tell you
did you get up on the internet and begin to find out? Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
That's interesting. Maybe there's a problem. Maybe we should do some work. What they do is, instead of professing concern and demonstrating concern for the increases and for the epidemic, they rush to the defense of their policy programs. And when you see the defense, what happens is you get an interesting idea. And there's a doctor in England who did some work and discovered this pattern of diarrhea in children.
That was Dr. Wakefield, wasn't it?
Dr. Wakefield, right. And he linked it to possible exposure to the measles mumps rubella vaccine. And his work, by the way, has never been contradicted in terms of what he found, clinically at the molecular level. It's been impeccable. It's been replicated many, many times. But if you were to read the public press, Dr. Wakefield is this villain, of all modern medicine. He's been vilified and ostracized, but the man is one of the great heroes of this whole episode.
Well, I think the story about Andrew Wakefield is the fact that he was attacked because he began actually doing colonoscopies on the children with this intense diarrhea. He found out that they had hypertrophied lymph nodes in their intestine, and of course, if you biopsy them, you would actually grow the measles virus out of there.
Right.
So there's live measles virus, and instead of saying, well, gee, maybe we could do something about it, they attacked him. In other words, why would they want to destroy Dr. Wakefield? They got him fired. They got him to the point where he actually had to leave England and come to the United States. Why would they attack a man who is trying to help children unless there was some sort of an agenda that there were people who didn't want to help the children? I mean, what other explanation would there be? They've done everything they could to ruin his career. They plagued him. He's come to the United States, tried to continue his work, and they're doing everything to continue attacking him. Why would they do that to a man who's just trying to help children?
Well, I think Andy Wakefield's a terrific guy, and I think he's done, terrific. He's a great scientist and a really disciplined and honorable man. I wouldn't want to speculate on the motives for those who attack him. I do believe that there is an ideological position that a lot of these people come from, and they simply believe, because they think it must be true, that all vaccines are good. And so they're unwilling intellectually just to accept the notion that there might be a risk.
But wouldn't you think that intelligent, educated, moral people would want to look at all sides and reevaluate the scientific basis? After all, science is a search for truth.
Absolutely.
Seems to me they've made up their mind. Thank you.
Thank you.
I certainly, one of the things that I think any of our listeners should be aware of the fact is that they keep talking about avian flu and the pandemic of avian flu. Is this absolutely true? There is a pandemic of avian flu, and millions have died. Millions of birds.
That's right.
But, of course, what they're trying to do is equate in the minds of people the threat of avian flu with the standard flu, and so everybody's got to get vaccinated or they're going to die. But very, very few people die. This, in fact, this idea of 36,000 people have died, they will say they die of a flu and, of course, associated conditions, which you're really talking about pneumonia, and people are always dying of pneumonia. And so, anyway, I mean, this is a disease of older people, and that's why they're dying. Not necessarily get the flu, although I'm sure occasionally you'll have people get the flu, and the weakened condition will contribute to death. But I think they're exaggerating. Is that your impression?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. No, and you actually look at the statistics. I think only something like a few hundred deaths every year are actually documented as being caused by influenza. But there is this category, as you said, of influenza and pneumonia, and that's the category that's large. And there's a theory that influenza leads to pneumonia, which it can sometimes. But there are a lot of things that can lead to pneumonia. And this model and you know, these estimates, which are not hard numbers, this number that you always hear, 36,000 deaths from the flu, is just you know statistics. It's not real. It's not documented. It's somebody's model. And it's somebody that wants to make the case for everyone to get a flu shot.
Well, the old adage, of course, that you know people are always making up statistics, and believe me, they're making up statistics there at the CDC because they have an agenda and they want to convince you got to take it. But why would you give this to pregnant women? There is no evidence, you know, that though the influenza increases morbidity or mortality in pregnant women, so why would you want to give them something that could seriously damage the forming fetus? This is the thing that really mystifies me.
It mystifies a lot of us. And there's certainly, there have been studies done, and there are actually no clinical benefits of the flu shot in pregnant women.
All right, and so, but they certainly there could be very some deleterious effects to the children, and this is something entirely new. Knowing full well that many people are concerned about the danger of thimerosal, they've suddenly said initially it was only in third trimester pregnancies and then second trimester, and now at any time, first trimester, and many of the women unfortunately to go into the doctor, and the first thing he says the first time they see them early in the pregnancy is, well, we've got to get you an influenza shot because the government has mandated it, or at least has suggested it. Is the government mandating or just suggesting?
It's recommended. And
so that puts the doctor into a very defensive position, doesn't it? He's really supposed to go along with what's recommended by the people in Atlanta.
That's right. And there are different ways of enforcing the rules, and one of the things that really adds teeth to the childhood immunization program is that you can't get into school until you've gotten fully vaccinated. So that's really a part of the deal. I don't think a mother getting an influenza shot has the same weight of stopping people from participating in society, but pregnant women are going to their prenatal checkups, and I think it's part of the recommended protective prenatal program that an obstetrician will go through with a pregnant woman, and so a lot of pregnant women are getting encouraged and taking the advice of their doctor and getting a flu shot.
But are there any studies that show that it is not harmful to the child? In fact, my understanding is if you read the brochure, they will tell you on the influenza shot that there is no evidence, it's not been experimented with women and pregnant women, and there's no evidence it's safe.
Giving mercury, exposing children and infants and fetuses to mercury on purpose is just stupid. There's no good reason to do it.
Well, but I mean, they even admit in the package insert that there's no evidence that it's been safe. It's not been tried. It's not been proven safe. And yet doctors are recommending it. And you have to wonder, do they ever read the package insert? And I will tell you, they don't. I know I never read those package inserts when I was practicing. The print is so small, you have to have a magnifying glass to see it. Why do they make the print so small nobody can read it? Unless maybe, maybe they have another agenda. Under any circumstances, what would you recommend for a parent or a grandparent that has an autistic child?
Well, I would recommend that they find some.
Thank you.